Tonight is Sunday, the 27th of June, 2004, and the Sunday night speakers meeting of Narcotics Anonymous welcomes our first speaker, Rhonda.
My name is Rhonda, I'm an addict.
Hi, Rhonda.
And I'd like to thank Jim for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I've been taking cakes sporadically for the last 3 weeks because I celebrated my 9th anniversary on June 5th. And it really feels good. I mean, when I came to this program, I had no idea that I was going to stay clean for 9 years. I had no idea I was going to stay clean for a year. I had no idea I'd stay clean for 30 days. I had been introduced to 12-step programs, and it didn't work. So when I came in this time, I didn't think this was going to work. I just wanted to get back into going to meetings. My last run lasted 3 years, and I knew that there was a solution here, but I did not believe that the solution was going to work for me. But at the end of that 3-year run, I was willing to try anything because I wanted to stop, but I did not know how. I didn't know how to stop. The last 5 years of my using, I know that I used every day, and I had no legal means of income. I did whatever I had to do to use, no matter what it was, no matter who it was with, whatever I had to do to use, because that's where my disease took me. And it wasn't always like that. I grew up in a very loving family. My mother and father wanted children desperately, and they were told that they could not have children. And after 4 years of marriage, they got pregnant with me. So my mother was ecstatic, and so was my dad. My mother was 24, my dad was 40. And they had me. 14 months later, they had my sister. And we were the only two children of that union. I was a daddy's girl. I was spoiled. You know, I hear different stories. I heard stories as I was growing up. You know, at the age of one, I had 22 dresses and 14 pairs of shoes. You know, different things like that. My mother loved her daughters and spoiled us. My father was sick. My father passed away when I was 5 and my sister was 4. And my mother raised her 2 girls on her own to the best of her ability. She had boyfriends, but she didn't get married again until my sister had graduated from high school because she didn't want some man over her children. But that's the story that I get. But I don't know. I believe that the disease was always in me. And I share this story. When I share my story, I share this one little story because in doing some writing, in writing the 12 steps, it came up, so I allowed it to come out. I think I was 7 or 8 years old, and we went to the elementary school in the neighborhood, and my mom used to save the dimes, the dimes with the female head on them, or nickels, one of them. She used to save them, and every day I would go in the drawer and I would take a dime, not thinking that one day they'd all be gone. But every single day I'd go in the drawer and I'd take a dime, and one day they were all gone. And my mom came and asked what happened to them. And I said, my sister did it. And I watched my mother spank my sister for something that I had done. Now, I'm 7 or 8 years old, so at a very early age in my life, I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. Very early. Had not touched any drugs. But I was good at lying and got away with it very early. I was real active in school. I was active in sports in junior high school and in high school. My mom was a single parent, so she didn't support a lot of the things that I did. Plus, my sister was sickly and in and out the hospital for 11 or 12 years until she passed away at the age of 21. I was 22. I spent a lot of years going back and forth to the hospital with my sister, spending the night at the hospital. It's just, that's the way my childhood was. As I said, my dad passed away when I was 5. my mother had a very close friend, her best friend, who was more like an aunt to me than my actual aunt. And Auntie Jane was her name. She had 7 children. One was my age. And we would always hang out. My mother worked a lot. She worked a couple of jobs so she could take care of her 2 girls so we could have what she wanted us to have. We had everything we wanted. You know, we had everything we needed and most of what we wanted because that's the type of mother I had. But I spent a lot of time with this other family, and it was so much fun because on the block that they lived on, there were like 6 families that had at least 4 children or more. A lot of them had more, so there was always a bunch of children to play with. And we were always going places, to the beach, to the park, you know, amusement parks, all kind of stuff. I had a fun childhood. It was fun. I remember, I think I was 15 years old when I tried a joint for the first time. Tina, my cousin, to this day I still call them my cousins. Tina had older sisters and a stepfather. The stepfather smoked weed, so that's where she got the joint. We tried it, and that was that. In high school, one more time, Tina had gotten some reds. You know, I tried it. I experimented early. Early it was just to try something to see what it was like. Curiosity. That's the way it started for me. I graduated from high school, and I went on to college. And life was pretty good, you know. I did really good my first year. I wasn't too far away from home. I went to Cal State Northridge, so it wasn't far from home. And I was on my own at 17 years old. You know, my mom had always talked about how she wanted her girls to be independent and, you know, go to college and be independent. And at 17, I moved away from home, from an environment where it wasn't that my mother was strict, but she was protective. She loved her girls, sheltered us. So I knew a little bit, but I didn't know a lot. So I'm out on my own at 17 years old, away from home, and able to make my own decisions without having to check with my mom first. And that's where I started experimenting a little bit more with marijuana. And I got pregnant my second year in college. And the plan was that I would have my child, and Auntie Jane would take care of them because that's what she did for a living, and I would go on back to school and complete my education. Well, I was 7 months pregnant, and Auntie Jane passed away. And she passed away. I had my daughter, and I did return to school. But in my life, there was a series of deaths, and I'm sure there are in other people's lives as well. But the way I chose to deal with them at that time, I was experimenting, but at that time is when I started buying my own drugs. And to stuff the feelings, because I love this lady. I knew her my entire life. My mother and Auntie Jane lived next door to each other. So I knew her my entire life. And as I said, we had the plans that she would take care of my child and I would return to school. And even though she passed away, I did return to school. I found someone else to take care of her. And I went ahead with my education. But during that period of time, when her children were grieving, I was grieving right along with them, and I started to get loaded every day. And as I said, I did return to school, but I wasn't focused on my education anymore because the disease of addiction kind of had me in its grip, kind of just a little bit. It was to the point I was using daily, but I wasn't using real bad. I went to school for 2 more years, and I dropped out. I dropped out to support myself and my daughter. So I remember calling home one day to tell my mother I needed something, and I was 22 years old at this time. I had a 2-year-old daughter, and my mother told me that she could no longer afford to take care of me and my daughter. So I had to get a job, and I dropped out of school, and I got a job. And Shortly thereafter, my sister passed away. But she passed away when I was 22. My sister passed away. And one more time, another death in my life, and the way I chose to deal with it was to get Lotus. And that's what I did. I was living in the valley at the time, and I decided to move home with my mom. And thinking that I, you know, being closer to her, having me and my daughter. And my mother knew that I was using, and she told me don't bring anything in her house. So I would keep my stash out in the car. And this was the beginning of where I started using in the morning on the way to work, sometimes at lunch, on the way home. And all the time, my daughter's right there in the car with me. Life was pretty good for me early on. You know, at the age of 24, I was working in the accounting field, had an office in Beverly Hills overlooking Wilshire Boulevard. My daughter was in private school. We dressed very well. Life was good. My own apartment, my own car. Life was good. And around the age of 25, I met the substance that eventually brought me to my knees. It started a cycle that would last for 13 years and take me to places where I never thought I would go. I ended up losing that apartment, losing a job. My daughter got kicked out of school. The first time I did a disappearing act was in 1986. I took my daughter to my mom's to babysit. I was going on a date. And the date was to go use, and I knew this. And a week later, when I went home, I went to my mom's house to get my daughter. She had gone to my apartment and completely moved my daughter out and told me that I could have her when I got myself together. My daughter was 10-year-old at this time. By the time I came into the rooms to get myself together, my daughter was in her second year in college. Being a mother meant nothing to me. The only thing that mattered to me at that time was partying and using and men. That's all that mattered. You know, I would see my daughter sometime on the weekend, but as my disease progressed, she didn't want to have anything to do with me. She didn't want to come around. She definitely didn't want to bring her friends around. I was a complete and total embarrassment to my daughter. But did that matter to me? No. The only thing that mattered was using, and I continued to use. And as I said when I started my share, the last 5 years of my using, I had no legal means of income, but I used every single day. I tried my first recovery program in 1991, and I did it because, like I said, I had become an embarrassment to my daughter, so I no longer wanted to be an embarrassment to her, so I thought I'd go get some help. And I went to this treatment center, and it was a co-ed facility. And they talked about working some steps. They talked about getting a book. They talked about staying out of a relationship for your first year. And I got into a relationship in that facility. So, of course, I didn't hear anything, or I didn't think that I heard anything. And I completed that program, but 2 months later, out of that program, he and I were using together. But because the seed had been planted, you know, I did hear a little bit of something. Even though I used, I still heard something. The seed had been planted. I went to another recovery program. After being out about a month or so, I went to another recovery program because I knew that I didn't have to live like that, and I also didn't want to live like that. So this time I went to an all-women's facility. And there, I did everything that I was supposed to do. If we were in a group and I had to participate in group, I did. But to share openly and honestly who I was, what I had done, where I had come from, I wasn't telling any of my business. It was my business. It was not your business. And I wasn't going to tell you. You know, outside of group, I didn't talk to the girls. I'd stay in my room. I'd read my book. didn't want to have anything to do with those women because I wasn't like them. You know, I have this better than attitude. So one more time, I completed that program as well, but it didn't take long before I was using again. And that was the beginning of that 3-year run that I talked about in the beginning, because I just didn't think this program was going to work for me. You know, I was different, even though I'd seen it work for many people, you know, because we went to meetings all the time, heard how it worked for people. It wasn't going to work for me because I was different. So I stayed out there. I had to abuse myself a few more years. And suicide crossed my mind. I ended up in this garage. It wasn't an abandoned garage, but there was this man lived in his garage. He was also another addict, and his family did not allow him in the house, but so he had fixed the garage up, and that's where I ended up. I was in this garage, and I was going down to downtown LA to get welfare. And I just felt horrible inside. I felt horrible and I felt empty. And all I wanted to do was just kill myself. Because I was living in this garage where 10 minutes to the left was my mother's home and 10 minutes to the right was my grandmother's home. But I was stuck in the middle in this garage that had no light or anything. We used candles at night. You know, it was just horrible. But this is the way that I chose to live. So I'm walking to the welfare office downtown and I cross over this freeway pass, and the thought of jumping off actually crossed my mind. But I thought about my daughter, and I couldn't do it. I went there. I was denied after staying there all day long. And one more time, I had to cross back over this freeway overpass, and I thought about it again, but I just didn't do it. I was standing on the corner, and this young man, I guess he could see the hurt and pain or whatever, so he came over and started talking to me and told me that he knew where I could get some help. There was a mental health association down the street, and if I told him I heard voices, that they would get me my own apartment and help me get myself together. So that's what I did. I went to this mental health association, told him I heard voices. 2 weeks later, I was in my own place, and it was an environment where there were other people just like me, but there were other people that actually did have some mental disabilities. But most of the people that were like me were doing the same thing that I was doing. We were living there, but we were still doing the same stuff. I was still getting loaded. The only requirement was for me to go to the facility 3 times a week, and I couldn't do that. You know, but in the process of being involved in the Mental Health Association, they helped me get SSI. And I remember when I got the letter denying me, I remember getting on my knees praying and asking God to please let me get this money. If I got this money, I would get myself together. So it took a few more months, but eventually I did get on SSI. I did get that large check, which to me was large. I think the first one was $11,000 or something like that. And of course I partied. Of course I partied. But I didn't party it all away. I remembered that prayer that I had made to God, and I started calling around looking for some place to go to get some help. And I also didn't want to spend all my money, so I was looking for the least expensive program I could find as well. And called a place out here in Santa Monica. And my cousin was getting married on June 3rd. I wanted to attend her wedding. And on June 5th, 1995, I made it to that facility, and that is my clean day. I haven't found it necessary to use since then. Now, in that program, I still had money. I still had money in the bank because I didn't party all the money up. My plan was that I would go in here for 30 days, and I'd get reacquainted with going to the program, and I'd get out, get me an apartment, go on with my life. And if I used, nobody would know because I wasn't going to use with anybody. It was just going to be me and my place, and everything was going to be okay. But in that 30-day program, I actually got a conscious contact with the God of my understanding. And I thought to myself, well, if I use, God's going to know. So maybe I need to rethink this. And there was a young man who is still my friend today. He came in on a panel, and he shared his experience, strength, and hope. And it was like a light bulb went on in my head. You know, one more time I was homeless, one more time I was jobless, one more time I was in a treatment center. Maybe I just might be powerless over this stuff. Maybe, you know, maybe something's not right with this picture. And that's when I became very willing to do whatever I had to do to stay clean. They said, get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. They said, call your sponsor. I called my sponsor. You know, they talked about working steps, and I did that. And after I completed the 30 days, one of the counselors suggested that I do a longer-term program, and I did. At that point in time, I was willing to follow anybody's suggestions. And I went to a longer-term program, and my sponsor told me I could not leave until I had 6 months. On the day that I had 6 months, I moved out, got me a little single, and she also said that I had to go back to this program where I went, because at that time I still had the SSI coming in, so I didn't have to work, because I was able to take care of myself. But she said, go back and be of service, volunteer your services. And that's what I did. I went back to the treatment center and I volunteered my services, and 2 months later they offered me a job there. So I worked there from the time I had 8 months to the time I had 3 years. I ended up changing sponsors in that period of time, but I was working steps. I think I was on my fourth step when I made the change. Got another sponsor, started from the beginning, and went through the 12 steps with my second sponsor. And then she went to law school, so I had to find someone else at 2.5 years clean. And I found a sponsor that I have today, and I've been with her for 6.5 years. And I recently completed the 12 steps, well, last month. Last month I completed the 12 steps for a second time. And the first time around, I wanted to work the steps because I heard you guys talk about how you change. You know, relief comes in working the steps, so you find out who you are, or as a result of working the steps, this is who I am today. And I was 38 years old when I got here, and I did not have a clue who Rhonda was. So if I could work these steps and they could help me find out who I was, that's what I did. And the first time around, I worked the 12 steps the first time within my first 2 years. I did not get a lot out of it the first time around. There was some awareness. Well, there was awareness that I could start and complete something, because that had been something that I hadn't done in a very long time. But my second time around, with the sponsor that I have, you know, there's no right or wrong way to do the steps, but if stuff doesn't come up that she feels that you need to get up, she'd have you do it again. So it took me a little bit longer to work the 12 steps this time, but I'm so grateful that, you know, when I didn't come up with some information or didn't dig deep enough, that she had me do more writing, because today I do know who I am. You know, I know about those defects of character. I know about my shortcomings, you know, and I personally, and this is my own belief, I don't believe they go away. I just believe that I just don't act out on them as often. You know, some I still act out on, but just not as often. But my life is good today. Early in recovery, I got involved in service. Now, that's something that I had never done before. You know, I had never try to do something for somebody else, you know, take a commitment at a meeting. I didn't have time to take a commitment at a meeting. It wasn't about that at all. But this time around, I wanted to do things different. I wanted to do things differently than the way I had done them the first two times of maybe trying this stuff. So I got commitments early in my recovery, and I also went to meetings every day, sometimes two a day, because I was really, really serious about this. One of my sponsors had mentioned that recovery had to be the most important thing to me. And it still is today. It's still the most important thing to me. And that's what I tell the women that I sponsor. When somebody asks me to sponsor them, that's the first thing that comes out of my mouth. Or I ask them, how important is this to you? Because it has to be the most important. Anyway, I started off with getting commitments at meetings on the meeting level. You know, my first commitment was a chip commitment. And, you know, then it started going from there, from chips to coffee to secretary to GSR or what have you. And then in being a GSR, I got involved in area service. You know, the man who is my husband today, but he wasn't my husband then, nominated me for my first area commitment as co-secretary. And I got that commitment, and I went on to be the secretary of the area, the treasurer of the area, the chair of phone lines. Being of service was very, very important to me. It was a way that I could give back. A thought just came in my head about making amends, because there's some amends that I just cannot make, and it's a way of making a living amends, to be of service to someone else. And it also makes me feel better about myself when I do that. I got involved with phone lines when I had one year clean. Because my sponsor told me that first year was all about me. It was all about finding out who I was, getting in touch with myself, and she didn't believe I had anything to give back at that time. So she said, wait until you're one, and that's what I did. You know, I followed some suggestions. I talked about that money, the first large check that I got, but when I was 5 months, when I had 5 months clean, I got another large check. And I told my sponsor about it, told her I went to buy a car, and she told me, no, why don't you just put it in the bank, and when you get a year, you can get yourself a car. And I did that. You know, I was very, very willing to follow some suggestions around here, because I did not want to go back to what I had lived through. You know, and the other two times that I had tried it, I always went back to the same people doing the same thing, and I ended up doing the same thing. You know, I heard this time around that you had to find new playmates in a new playground. And when I completed that program, I got an apartment out here, because I didn't know anybody out here. So this was my new playground, and then going to meetings and meeting people, you guys became my new playmates. And I wanted to do the same thing you guys were doing, staying clean one day at a time. And one day at a time, it has been 9 years, and it's been wonderful. Shortly before, 2 weeks before I had my 6th birthday, I got married to a man that I love dearly. He, in my opinion, is a wonderful example of recovery. But we also, other than sharing our recovery, we almost share the same clean time. I have 2 days more than him, and I never let him forget it. I came to my senses 2 days more than he came to his. But we have a very, very good relationship, in my opinion. I love him dearly. I know he loves me, and blah, 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 blah. We share recovery and a whole bunch of other things. But I never thought I'd get married. When I got married, I was 45 years old. I never thought I'd get married, because for so long, I didn't love myself. So how could I even think somebody else would love me? But as a result of working the steps and getting in touch with Rhonda, finding out who Rhonda was, I learned to love Rhonda. And therefore, somebody else could learn to love me, too. My relationship with my daughter, I have a wonderful relationship with my daughter. Now, this is a child that I believe I abandoned at the age of 10. She has forgiven me for that. You know, I have two beautiful grandchildren that have never seen me loaded, and they never have to. My grandson is 8. My granddaughter will be 5 in September. You know, and that's one of my goals, is for them never to see me clean. I mean, excuse me, never to see me loaded. They've seen me clean, but never to see me loaded. I have a wonderful relationship with my mother. I used to think everything that went on with me was her fault. None of it was her fault. None of it. I know that today. But she was the reason I was the way I was for so long. But today, she's my mom. I learned early on in my recovery that I could not change her. She is still the same person today that she's always been. I've changed. I can deal with her differently. When she starts to push a button, I just back away. Real simple, real easy. I sponsor women today. I am still of service. I do the things today that I did in the beginning. Maybe not as much, but I still do the same things. I believe in the basics, and I do the basics. What got me clean is keeping me clean, and that's what I believe. So if there's anybody more than myself, because I always forget to, you know, say something to the newcomer, but if there's anyone newer than myself, it works. The program of Narcotics Anonymous works. If we get out of the way and allow it to work in our lives, it works. I'm living proof of it. Thanks for listening.
All right.